The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Lots to get to on today's program. Coming up in the second segment, we'll be playing the audio from the TV program that we recorded on Friday last week, a pivotal sign that we're living in the last days. On that program, we drew attention to the new booklet, A Pivotal Sign of the End Time, that was pulled together by Joel Hilliker, one of our writers at headquarters in Edmond. Powerful little booklet pointing to Herbert Armstrong and the many prophecies regarding his end-time office. And I think it'll tie in nicely with what we talk about here in the first segment. Really, as we get into his signature prophecy, we've referred to that so many times before, the prophecy of a coming United States of Europe. Quite a lot going on in the lead up to the Munich Security Conference coming up, this weekend. So we'll have quite a bit to say about that. The details coming out, I guess the report ahead of the conference is now out. So we'll have a few tidbits from that. But I just want to jump ahead and cover this article first. I was going to try to get to it at the end of this segment, but I think the more I thought about it in the last few minutes before going on air, I think it really will help. It'll help us to understand some of the events that we're seeing in Europe, all that's happening with Brexit. And now, as I say, the Munich Security Conference, and you know what will be discussed there, the unstable world, a lot of it caused by Donald Trump. That's the narrative now. And what Europe, specifically Germany and France, needs to do to counter that, to combat that. But this first article that I want to draw your attention to, this is an article that should be read by international relations students all over the world, all over the United States at least. It's at PJ Media. It's not even a huge news site. It's a good little blog. From time to time, there's some really interesting stories there, some important stories even. But this one about an individual that, he's had some interaction with the German people over the years, going back to the 1980s. And he says here that anti-Americanism, it's as German as apple strudel. Anti-Americanism. And he also brings out, it predates Donald Trump. We can't look at what's happening in Europe today, in Germany or France, and say that, this anti-American sentiment, it was brought on by the election of Donald Trump. It's just something that's new, just in the last couple of years. It's only come on the scene since 2016. And all you have to do, as this author does, I failed to write down his name, I apologize for that, but all you have to do is dig a little bit beneath the surface. He cites all of these studies. 85% of Germans view the United States either negatively or very negatively. Why would that be? It says that many Germans look more favorably upon communist China than they do the United States. Many Germans, they want to see Germany distance itself from America. They're not supportive of NATO. They want a European army. Many of them support this idea. And then you look at some of the things that have happened. We've talked about this, the case of the reporter at Der Spiegel that was producing all of these bogus stories about Americans, just confirming in the minds of Germans every stereotype they had about America. As it turns out, he made a lot of it up. But it was exactly what Spiegel readers wanted to read. That's the significance of that story. He was He was just fake. He was printing fake news. He was producing fake news. And the editors at Spiegel, they didn't look into it closely enough to prevent it from going out. It was exactly what they wanted to hear. It was exactly what they wanted to read, as was brought out in a commentary for The Atlantic. It says Relotius, that's the last name of the author, he told them what they wanted, what they expected to hear about America. The fact that his stories, many of them patently absurd, not only made it past Der Spiegel's editors and fact-checkers, but also didn't raise readers' eyebrows, revealed ugliness, argues Kirchick. This is the commentator at The Atlantic. It revealed ugliness within the publication as well as German society more broadly. Spiegel is the top daily in Germany. It's Germany's leading news magazine. And these articles were wildly popular. The PJ Media piece says here, it was predictable enough that FAZ would, that's one of the, I guess, the sources for these studies. It was predictable enough that FAZ would link the results of the Atlantic Bruck poll to the Trump inauguration. But in fact, German anti-Americanism has nothing to do with Trump. Of course, anti-Americanism exists everywhere in the world, and especially in Europe, whose political and cultural elites viewed the democratic U.S. from the moment of its founding with aristocratic disdain. It says, but contempt for the U.S. has always been especially intense and irrational in Germany, which has its own distinctive reasons, if that's the right word, for despising the superpower across the sea. What he brings out here really is grounded in history. And that's why you're not going to get much of it in university today. That's why it should be required reading. Certainly within international relations classes. But it's not. It's not, sadly. He talks about in this article his first trip to Germany back in 1980. This was before the Iron Curtain came down. And he was traveling the country with a college friend. And as he says, it was a busy trip, and they were meeting with young people. This is back in 1980. This is more than a generation ago. And he says the people that he encountered, one after another, of these young Germans felt compelled to make it clear to me at once that they despised my country. They despised the United States. He says it was explained to me Germany had been the bad guy a few decades earlier, but now the U.S. was the bad guy. This, mind you, at a time when their country, speaking of Germany, was divided into two by the Iron Curtain, and when the only thing keeping their own part of it, the free part, the prosperous part, that's speaking of West Germany, from being overrun by the Red Army was the U.S. military presence in their midst. It was the United States propping up West Germany. It was the United States ensuring the freedom, the safety of West Germans. And yet, as he encountered, it was many West Germans who despised the United States. He says further on, no matter who is the U.S. president or what issues were in the headlines, the anti-Americanism persisted, invariably attributed to some recent U.S. action. There's always an excuse for anti-Americanism. Right now, of course, the most popular one is Donald Trump. But there were many other excuses before Donald Trump ever came along. He gives the example, again, of another visit to Germany years ago, when an older lady looked down on him with disdain. And again, he's not wanting to overgeneralize here. But he's commenting his views on how Germans see Americans. People that are undisciplined, disorderly, not serious, superficial, materialistic, spoiled. And some of that's true, of course. But that's fueling, as he brings out, the hatred, the animosity that you see coming forward in many, many of these polls. Listen to this. He says, Germans also hate America because it's a superpower moreover, just to rub it in, that being isolationist at heart, never really set out to be a superpower. And that has accepted that role only out of concern for the preservation of the international order and freedom. Germany, all right, here's some important history. Listen up. Germany, on the contrary, has been aching to be a superpower from the get-go. It has longed to rule. Back in the middle of the last century, it went all in on the effort to control the world, and it failed disastrously. And America alone, through the Marshall Plan, helped it get back on its feet, repaying genocidal megalomania with magnanimous generosity. That's a little history, recent history, following the end of World War II. U.S. forces crushing Hitler's Nazi war machine, and then rebuilding Germany. He says the most sensible journalist in Germany, Henry Broder, noted in 2013 for Die Welt that his countrymen's viciously romantic anti-Americanism dates back to the 19th century. And then he talks about more recent events since that time. But this goes back a long way, according to one of the most sensible journalists in Germany. He says, maybe we have a shameful past, but the Americans have a shameful present, says this commentator in Germany from 2013. For Germans, the PJ Media piece says, demonizing America is a handy way of dealing with, or rather not dealing with, their own history. All right, well, we were the bad guy back then, but you're the bad guy today. It says in 2014, Eric T. Hansen, an American freelance writer based in Berlin, amusingly recounted in Die Welt, or rather Die Zeit, his unsuccessful efforts to sell articles to American publications about various events that revealed the dark underside of Germany. Alas, he discovered that Americans weren't interested in Germany bashing. By contrast, listen to this, if the same events had taken place in America, you would be able to read about them in the German newspapers the next morning. It's because that's what they want to read. They love it. They love it. Anti-Americanism is not only socially acceptable in Germany, it's downright politically incorrect to miss an opportunity to put America down. He offers a theory, this freelance writer, stationed in Berlin. He said that while the loss of World War II had rendered anti-Semitism verboten or forbidden, the resulting vacuum was soon filled by anti-Americanism. So you can't get away with openly blatant anti-Semitism today, although there's certainly an undercurrent of that, and it's getting stronger in Europe. But it's been replaced, in many respects, it's been replaced by anti-Americanism. The author says here in 2015, the German writer, Rainer Werner, reported at his blog on the recent Allensbach Institute poll about attitudes toward the United States. It says, like the Atlantic Brook survey, it showed that a large majority of Germans dislike the U.S., seeing it as a vulgar consumer society and rejecting the notion that the U.S. is a champion of freedom and human rights. Another poll, this from the Pew Research Center, indicated that of all America's allies, the Germans were second only to the Turks in viewing America unsympathetically. Of all of our supposed allies, here again, you go back to the poll he cited at the start, 85%, is that what it was? 85% that view the United States either negatively or very negatively. It says, listen to the history. Consider the history. Imperial ambitions are in the German DNA. And no people possessed of such ambitions enjoy living in the shadow, and especially under the benevolent protection of another country. They have their own imperial ambitions. And a lot of that is rooted in mass slaughter. World War II, before that, World War I. Both world wars started by Germany. It says, asked in that 2015 Pew survey why they were so hostile to the U.S., Germans cited, among other things, President Obama's failure to close Guantanamo. That was 2015. That's before Donald Trump came along. But there's always something. It says further on, this is near the end of the piece now, it says, in Grau's view, does World War II play into this? West Germans knew America had saved them from Soviet conquest and were at first thankful, but that gratitude eventually curdled into an anti-American neurosis that led them in later years to express solidarity with the most obnoxious autocrats in the world, from Saddam to Assad, simply because they were America's enemies. America, wrote Grau, represents just about everything that is frowned upon in this country: individualism, personal responsibility, skepticism toward the state, capitalism. But most offensive of all to Germans, Grau suggested, is the idea of freedom. Freedom, he says finally, the idea of freedom doesn't resonate for them as it does for us. Their ancestors fought wars of conquest, and they understand that. But they'll never be able to fully process the fact that Americans actually fought a war to free them from a psychopathic dictator whom they had followed in mindless obedience. He's talking about just a different mindset, and it's revealed in history, this stark difference, and it's building today to another clash, to another confrontation, yes, to another world war. And so as European nations gather together this week in Munich for the Munich Security Conference, it's important that you understand some context. It's important that you understand what drives, what motivates some of these anti-American statements. The global liberal order is fragmenting, says the Munich Security Conference report. It's fragmenting, but who can fit the pieces together again? The world is in crisis, the report says. And the United States is only making things worse. We're living in a world of crisis, says the Munich Security Conference host. And the United States is making matters worse. America's the problem. America's the one that needs to be confronted. America is not a force for good. Far from it. Here's the Times of London reporting on this forthcoming conference. It says the U.S. under President Trump is perceived as a greater threat to Europe's security than China or Russia. Than Russia, if you can believe it. A greater threat to European security than Vladimir Putin's Russia. It says Mr. Trump's standing has fallen so low among America's allies that people in France and Germany are now significantly more likely to say they trust President Putin and President Xi to do the right thing on the global stage. They trust Russia and China more than they trust the United States. So do you get a sense of where this is building, what it's leading to, where this is headed? They're unhappy in Europe. The leaders in Europe, they're not happy with the United States. And so they need to band together. And the Bible, of course, prophesies of that. 10 nations. Right now, following Brexit, there's just going to be the 27, or just, there's 27, but it's going to be pruned down, pared down to the 10. And so you have all of these voices not only pointing out the evil of the United States and Donald Trump, but really exhorting European leaders to build the army, to come together for a stronger union. George Soros, he had a piece this week saying that Europe needed to wake up. We're sleeping. You need to wake up and mobilize to defend the values on which the EU is founded. Commentary magazine, it had an interesting piece as well from the February issue that just talked about the numbers. Look, if we can just come together, look at the power. If you put all of our economies together, if you put our militaries together, it made me think of what Herbert Armstrong said on his old radio broadcast. He talked about this in the 1960s, that when it does come together, the size and the power of this united Europe, it's going to shock the world. Here's what he said, clip one.
Gradually, and now faster and faster, a new power is being developed from underneath the surface, a new world power, which the public now least suspects, which the world does not yet see, doesn't realize, doesn't dream is coming, but it is developing just as prophesied in Europe, a resurrected Roman Empire that will combine some 350 millions of population, a power so mighty that our Western peoples will stand aghast when it flashes suddenly into full being. Yes, your Bible says that the world will be startled.
The world will be startled when they see it. Now they see the union that's there, the loose political union. There's an economic union. But when they see that close, intimate 10 nations, one mind, Revelation 17 and verse 13, one mind with the beast, and then all of the power put together economically, militarily. Europe is on the brink, as it is right now, as it stands today. It's about to be massively restructured. There are nations, and Germany and France are leading the way. They're preparing for radical changes, dramatic changes. A United States of Europe. Commentary says, what Europe needs to do, here it is, to make Europe great again, the post-Brexit 27 would have to coalesce into a single state with a strong executive characterized by decision, activity, secrecy, and dispatch, as Alexander Hamilton famously argued in the Federalist Papers. Now, the commentary magazine seems skeptical that this could ever happen, given the way it is today. That's why there's going to be a dramatic reshaping of the continent or the empire. This article talks about how that if you look in history, whether it's the United States or even British history, and to bring all of these different peoples together under one empire, it's going to take some acts of desperation. It's going to take even some acts of violence, if need be. Like I say, commentary believes this is such a challenge that it's probably never going to happen, but it will happen. Your Bible says that it will. Revelation 17 spells it out. And of course, Mr. Armstrong also talked about, again, based on Revelation 17, that the Catholic Church, they're going to need the Catholic Church, the good graces of the Catholic Church, as Mr. Armstrong said in this next clip that I have for you. The woman, remember, is straddling the beast. Listen to this one, clip two.
Now, a united Europe will bring about a power, a superpower, because the nations of Europe want to unite. They just don't know how to do it. And it's possible that the now present Pope may, or a future one, however it may be, extend his good offices to help them bring about what they would like to have in Europe. Not only economical cooperation, but an absolute political union with a common currency and a common military force. There is a great deal of nuclear power and weapons over there belonging to the United States, but which they could easily just take over.
That's Herbert Armstrong from one of his sermons back in 1978. So there's a lot left to happen, but it's going to happen in a very short period of time. As European leaders get together this weekend talking about a world in crisis, talking about how Europe needs to come together to deal with the real menace in Washington, D.C. Consider the history that's driving this. Consider the prophecy. The prophecy that Herbert Armstrong was talking about back in the 1940s. The signature prophecy, as I said at the start of the segment. Here's Germany, responsible for both world wars. And then with World War II coming to an end, all of their top generals, scientists, industrialists, their top bankers, knowing they were about to lose the Second World War, they drew up secret plans for a third round. And so the recess between the Second and the Third World Wars, it's been longer than the one between World War I and World War II, but still it's only a recess, a brief recess, before World War resumes. The signature prophecy, Mr. Armstrong said back in the 60s, we know how the United States of Europe will be used by Germany to attempt world domination. Prophecy shows 10 kings, 10 dictators will arise in Europe and give their power to Germany. When we come back, speaking of signature prophecies, we'll talk about a pivotal sign, the audio from Friday's recording, a pivotal sign of the end time. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry. The Bible foretells of a soon coming time when Jesus Christ will return to this earth as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. At that time, the knowledge of God will cover the whole earth as the waters cover the sea. On today's program, we will examine a major sign Jesus Christ gave of when he would return to this earth.
You're living in a world that is erupting, a world that is changing so drastically.
God tells us what's going to happen in this world. He tells us what's prophesied, and there is a key to unlock these prophecies.
I tell you, it is about time we began to blow the dust off of the Bible, because it reveals the meaning of everything in your life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the program. The world today is convulsing in very dangerous and dramatic developments and events. Many people wonder, are we living in the last days? Your Bible says that in the time of the end, the world would be engulfed in cataclysmic events that would threaten the life of every person on earth. And then Jesus Christ will return. So what is the pivotal sign that we are living in the very last days? And could it be possible that the major sign that Jesus Christ is about to return has already been fulfilled? We'll begin our study today in Isaiah chapter 40. Get your Bible, please, and read along with me.
and see how so many of these prophecies that we'll cover today, they're very similar. They all tie together. They're all connected to the return of Jesus Christ. The first verse here, Isaiah 40 and verse 3, it says, "The voice of him that cries in the wilderness, prepare you the way of the eternal. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God." Notice it refers to a voice, singular. Well, actually, you can read through and study this prophecy and see that it's actually talking about more than one voice, but we're going to focus in on one voice from one era of God's church. A voice crying in the wilderness. That's what the prophet Isaiah said. This is a now prophecy. It's for our time today. It's for the last days. And you can see, if you keep reading, verses 4 and 5, it says, "Every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill shall be made low, and the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places plain, and the glory of the eternal shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the eternal has spoken it." You can see this voice comes on the scene, cries out in the wilderness, a wilderness of religious confusion, as Herbert Armstrong used to say. And it leads right into the wonderful world tomorrow. It's tied directly to the return of Jesus Christ. Look at verse 10. It says, "Behold, the eternal God will come with strong hand, and his arm shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. The eternal will come with a strong hand," it says there. And so you see how this prophecy, as I say, it's tied together with the return of Jesus Christ. Now look at the prophet Malachi. This is the last book in the Old Testament, Malachi chapter 3. And again, this is an end time prophecy. Now there is some duality to this prophecy, as I'll note here in just a second. But this is Malachi 3 verse 1. It says, "Behold, I will send my messenger, and he," singular, notice that, "he shall prepare the way before me, and the eternal whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant." So two messengers, the one, of course, referring to Jesus Christ, the messenger of the covenant. But it says that before that, "I'll send a messenger, and he," singular, "will prepare the way before me," before Jesus Christ. So there was one who would come and prepare the way for Jesus Christ in the first century at his first coming. And of course, that was John the Baptist. But this is talking primarily about the second coming. And you can see it if you just keep reading. Look at verse 2. It says, "But who may abide the day of his coming?" That's speaking of Christ's coming. Which one? The first time or the second coming? Well, it says, "And who shall stand when he appears? For he's like a refiner's fire and like fuller's soap." This is talking about the second coming, when Jesus Christ comes and it's like a refiner's fire. He comes and he purges the earth, or he cleanses the world of all of its impurities. That's not what he did at his first coming. The first time he came as that lamb sacrifice. Now that too was prophesied. But he said to his disciples, "If I go, I'm coming again." And the next time that he comes, it's going to be like a refiner's fire. Look one page over, Malachi chapter 4. This is right at the end of the Old Testament. You see the last two verses here, verse 5. It says, "Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he," here again, singular, "he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse." This is obviously an end-time prophecy. The time setting here is the day of the Lord. Now, you can move into the Gospels and see in Luke chapter 1 and verse 17, it says point blank that John the Baptist came in the spirit and the power of Elijah. So John the Baptist was an individual man. He came to prepare the way. He came just before Jesus Christ came during the first century. And it says plainly in Luke 1 that he came in the spirit and power of Elijah. So the question is, who came in this end time? Who came in the spirit and the power of Elijah in this end time? to prepare the way for the second coming of Christ. This is the pivotal sign that I'm talking to you about on today's program. The sign that Jesus Christ's return is imminent. Let me give you a quote from Malachi's Message. This is my father's book, written in 1989, and it talks a lot about these end-time prophecies. All of the literature that we're going to be offering today talk about some of these prophecies that we're going through. But it says here, only one man of God is in the spotlight to prepare the church for Christ's second coming. John the Baptist came in the spirit of Elijah, but he never turned the hearts of the fathers to the children. And then further on, it says he, that's the end time John, or John the Baptist, or the one that would come in the spirit and power of Elijah, would turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and prepare the way for Christ's second coming. So another servant of God would come in the end time, and he'd come in the spirit and power of Elijah. And that individual, his work, his ministry, the work that God would do through him, that would be a pivotal sign. I really want to encourage you to, we've never offered this booklet on the program before, a pivotal sign of the end time. All of the prophecies that we're going to be looking through today, they're discussed in this powerful little booklet, Malachi 3 and 4, which we just read, Isaiah 40. After the break, we'll go over to Matthew 17. It really and truly is a pivotal sign, and it's referred to, as you're already seeing on today's program, it's referred to in multiple prophecies, many, many prophecies. Now, we've offered these other books before, Malachi's Message and Mystery of the Ages. It talks about an end-time Elijah prophecy as early as page 8 in this book. And then you go forward into chapter 6 of the book, chapter 6 of Mystery of the Ages, the truth about the church, the true church of God. And there's a whole section in there, here again, about these end-time prophecies, pivotal prophecies, prophecies that prove we're in the very last days. Many of you, I know, probably already have copies of Mystery of the Ages and Malachi's Message. If you don't, then by all means, ask the operator for free copies of those books as well. But I know you don't have this one, because this is the first time that we've offered this booklet on television here in the UK, a pivotal sign of the end time. Stay tuned. Take down the information that you need to so that you can call our operators today and request your free copy of this new booklet. We'll be right back.
Time has proven Mystery of the Ages to be the most important book written in nearly 1,900 years. This world's humanity has been blinded to who, what, and why man is, how man appeared on Earth. Man has been mystified by his inability to solve his problems or find answers to the perplexing questions of mankind and the world he inhabits. All these mysteries were long ago revealed by the one supreme authority of all knowledge, but in a coded message, not allowed to be revealed and decoded until our time. In Mystery of the Ages, these great mysteries of life are thoroughly explained in vivid detail. Request your free copy of Mystery of the Ages today.
We recently passed the 33rd anniversary of Herbert W. Armstrong's death. He died on January 16th, 1986. He's the one who authored Mystery of the Ages, the book that talks about the end time Elijah, or the Elijah to come. That's the way one subhead reads on page 8 of this book. And then, as I say, he talks about it at length at the end of chapter 6, toward the end of the book. That's because these are pivotal prophecies. And that's why we want you to have this other new booklet, A Pivotal Sign of the End Time. All of these works, though, if you don't have them in your library, you need them. Because this prophecy we're talking about today, it is tied directly to the return of Jesus Christ. Now, some of you are familiar with the history of the Worldwide Church of God following the death of Herbert Armstrong and the great falling away from the truth. That too is prophesied. I'll have to save that material or those prophecies for another program. But that turning away, that falling away, like it says in 2 Thessalonians 2, that too is a sign of the imminence of the return of Christ. But God also said during that falling away that he would raise up the ruins through a remnant a small group of people who remained faithful to the truth. And that work began with Malachi's message, the other book that I pointed to earlier. And as it happens, we sent that booklet out, Malachi's message, 4 years, almost to the day that Herbert Armstrong died. We assembled on January the 10th, I believe, in 1990, and packaged almost 1,000 Malachi's messages, sent them out there in the United States to about 1,000 people, as I say, and that went out, and they received those books on or around January the 16th, 1990, from the very beginning of this work, the work that sponsors this program. You've had a focus on that anniversary, on Herbert Armstrong and his ministry, on Mystery of the Ages. Now I want to take you through a prophecy here in Matthew 16, actually Matthew 17, but we'll start at the last verse of Matthew 16. First, one quote here from Malachi's message, my father's book. It says, "The one predominant issue for God's people in the end time revolves around a modern-day Elijah. He restored all things," and he references Matthew 17. We'll go through that here in just a minute. It says, if we know God, the Bible, and where God's church is, then it's easy to find Elijah. These are pivotal prophecies, and yet you don't hear them discussed. You watch any of the religious programs on TV today, nobody talks about this. And yet these are prophecies that Jesus himself uttered. We'll see it here in Matthew 17. So much detail. And he tells his disciples, now you better know who this is. You certainly better be familiar with this prophecy and study it and dig into it. That's why we want for you to order the free material today. Pivotal prophecy. Look at Matthew 16 here in verse 28. It says, "Verily I say unto you, there be some standing here which shall not taste of death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." So these disciples, this is Jesus Christ with his disciples, and he's telling them that some of you are going to see the kingdom of God in a vision, obviously, and it continues on with that vision in chapter 17. So they actually got to peer into the coming kingdom. It says in the first part of chapter 17, "And after 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John," so these are the ones who saw it, John, his brother, and he brought them up into a high mountain and was transfigured before them, and his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as light." So Peter, James, and John, they got this extraordinary look at Jesus Christ in his future glory, the glory that he's to have when he returns to this earth, his second coming, when he comes, remember, as that refiner's fire, purifying the earth of all of its sins and transgressions, ridding it of all of its impurities. That's coming at the second coming. So here he is, pictured in all of his fiery brilliance. You can read Revelation 1 sometime and see Jesus Christ described there as a being, a spirit being whose face shines like the sun. Read through that entire chapter sometime. That's Revelation 1. Staying here in Matthew 17, verse 3 says, "And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elijah talking with them." Luke's account of this transfiguration explains that Moses and Elijah appeared in glory. So you have Christ and his glorified brilliance, and then you have Moses and Elijah. Again, this is projecting ahead into the kingdom when these two will be resurrected to spirit life. And then they too will have this glorious appearance, glorified God beings, just as it talks about in Romans 8. If we suffer together with Christ, we're going to be glorified together with him. That's the incredible human potential for mankind. We have plenty of other material that tells you all you need to know about that, but let's keep focused here. Verse 4, it says, Then answered Peter and said unto Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you will, let us make here three tabernacles, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elias," or Elijah. While he yet spoke, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them all. And behold, a voice out of the cloud which said, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Hear you him." Hear my Son. Hear what my Son has to say. This now is God the Father. Here comes this dazzling cloud overshadowing all of them, blinding light, and God the Father thundering out of the cloud. This is my beloved Son, Jesus Christ, that is. Hear him. Listen to him. Listen to the prophecies he's about to utter. You better key in on this. Notice verse 6, and when his disciples heard it, they fell on their face and were sore afraid. They were shaken by this. The power and the might of Almighty God. What a vision. What a transfiguration to see the kingdom in all of its glory. Well, continuing on, verse 7, it says, and Jesus came and touched them and said, arise and be not afraid. And when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no man save Jesus only. And as they came down from the mountain, so the vision ends, the transfiguration ends, it says Jesus charged them, saying, tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man be risen again from the dead. After my resurrection, then go ahead and tell everyone. But for now, just keep it quiet. It says, and the disciples asked him, saying, notice this, verse 10. The disciples asked him, saying, why then say the scribes that Elijah must first come? So they receive this vision of the kingdom. And Jesus says, now don't tell anyone about it until after my resurrection. And immediately the disciples asked him, so then why do the scribes say that Elijah must first come before this kingdom, before the second coming of Jesus Christ? Notice how it's tied directly to the second coming, this prophesied Elijah, and the return of Jesus Christ. Notice what Christ says. Verse 11, and Jesus answered and said to them, Elias, or Elijah truly, shall first come and restore all things. Now, what's important to note here is that the first Elijah, John the Baptist, remember, that's Luke 1:17, and the duality there of Malachi 3 and verse 1, the first Elijah already had come and gone, John the Baptist. And Jesus says here, Elijah truly shall first come. So there's a duality here, remember? Malachi 3:1. It's talking about two messengers. Well, there's one messenger referred to, but it's dual. There was one messenger to prepare the way for his first coming, and then one messenger to prepare the way for the second coming. And Jesus tells his disciples, he says that Elijah shall first come. And what's he going to do? He's going to restore all things. Restore all things. Now, John the Baptist didn't do that. John the Baptist didn't turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and vice versa. He didn't come with this family vision, not like Herbert Armstrong in this end time. Read Mystery of the Ages and prove it for yourself. The God family vision. Mr. Armstrong thundered away at that. And he restored all things. What does that mean? Well, if you get this new booklet, a pivotal sign of the end time. The second half of this booklet goes through all of these pivotal doctrines. The doctrines, the true doctrines of God's true church. And you'll see as you study through this booklet just how unique and special those doctrines are. They're not taught in the traditional Christian denominations of this world. No, they're not. And yet, if you study into those doctrines, this is sort of a summary of it all, but it then points you to probably 20 or 30 other booklets or books that you can study to prove that those doctrines that have been restored to God's church, that they come right out of the Bible. They come right out of your Bible. Prove it. Prove me wrong. If you don't think I'm telling you the truth, at least face it yourself. And prove all things, like Paul said in 1 Thessalonians 5:21. See if what I'm telling you is the truth or not. That's what you want to do. You can't just take my word for it either. You have to prove it for yourself. Verse 12, it says, but I say unto you that Elijah is come already. So verse 11, he says, Elijah shall come. Then he says in verse 12, now Elijah has come already. What does he mean by that? Well, John the Baptist had come already, the first one. The first Elijah, well, the first to come in the spirit of Elijah. Of course, you can go back far into the Old Testament and get to the original Elijah, Elijah the prophet. But then one would come in the first century in the spirit and power of Elijah. John the Baptist did that. He did come. He had come already, and they knew him not. Notice that. That's verse 12. They didn't know him. Here he was prophesied to come, and most people didn't even know. They didn't even know it when he was right there in their midst. Could that happen again in this end time? Because there's an end time Elijah that's prophesied to come as well. Is it possible that he's already come and gone and that people didn't even recognize it? That people didn't even realize it? That they knew him not? Well, look at what's happened. Look at what happened in the first century. Look at what verse 13 says. Then the disciples understood that he spoke unto them of John the Baptist. So the disciples knew. He says there is a prophesied Elijah to come. He shall come. And then he says, now there was one that's come already. And they knew. The disciples knew he was talking about John the Baptist. So it is possible for you as a disciple of Christ to know who fulfilled this end time prophecy. Let me take you to Malachi's message. This is my father's book. Mr. Armstrong said he fulfilled the Elijah role. Most WCG members heard him say that. Mr. DeCotch, that's the one who succeeded Mr. Armstrong, heard and agreed when Mr. Armstrong was alive and shortly after his death, but not now. You see, all of this changed just a few years after Mr. Armstrong died. And then they started saying, oh, these prophecies, they don't mean what we always knew them to mean. They changed it. They just dismissed. They set aside these pivotal doctrines, these pivotal prophecies. It says the big issue in this subject is Christ said an end-time Elijah would come and restore all things. We just read it. You read it for yourself if you're reading along with me. Elijah, it says, Herbert Armstrong, did come. Now, if we deny that, we're calling Christ a liar. Maybe you need to study further just to see for yourself what God did through Herbert Armstrong, what Herbert Armstrong restored. If you're new to this program, some of this is, I'm sure, very new and even surprising to you. But we do have material, plenty of it, that can bring you right up to speed. If you look at chapter 6, I mentioned page 8 early on in this book about the Elijah to come. You fast forward to chapter 6, Mr. Armstrong goes through a lot of the same passages, or at least references them, that we've gone through on today's program. Malachi 3, Malachi 4, Luke 1, verse 17, Matthew 17. He also touches on Matthew 24 and verse 14. I'll leave that to you to go and study. But he says at the end of chapter 6, these prophecies have been fulfilled. Have been. See, God sent. He sent someone to this earth in these latter days to come in the spirit and the power of Elijah to restore all things, to bring a family vision, a family message, and to prepare the way for Jesus Christ's return. That has happened. Let's see how much time we have left to just go back to Malachi 4. Malachi 4 and verse 4. It says here, Remember you the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him at Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments. Here the admonition is from Malachi the prophet. You better remember. You better go back and know your history. And this is fairly recent history. It's been 33 years, yes. It's been about a generation. But still, it's not that far. It's not that far back. And if you're willing to go back and to dig into this truth, you can know and understand everything that you need to about this pivotal prophecy. Verses 5 and 6 again, as we read earlier, I'll send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. It's happened, and this booklet proves it. Make sure that you request this free booklet, a pivotal sign of the end time. One last quote here. Those who fail to rally around Mr. Armstrong and his God family instructions won't be in God's kingdom. Now more than ever is the time to rally around Mr. Armstrong and his teachings, particularly Mystery of the Ages. And then we have these other special works to help you, to give you a supplement to the study. A pivotal sign of the end time. Make sure that you call our operators today and request all of this free material. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you next time.
The world today is convulsing in dramatic, dangerous developments and events. A perilous and even deadly future seems to be unfolding. Many people are wondering, are we in the end time? The Bible prophesies that in the time of the end, the world will be engulfed by shocking, cataclysmic, violent events that will threaten the life of every person on the planet. And then Jesus Christ will return. Many people don't realize this, but Jesus Christ was a prophet. He spoke specific, detailed, dramatic prophecies. He prophesied of a number of signs to watch for that would reveal when his return is imminent. God recorded and preserved Jesus' prophecies, and you can read them today, nearly 2,000 years later, in your own Bible. This new booklet focuses on the most pivotal end-time Bible prophecy, and it was spoken by Jesus Christ himself. People who truly believe in Jesus Christ and in what he taught can know whether we are, in fact, living in the end time. Request our new booklet, A Pivotal Sign of the End Time, to learn more.